My name is Lydia, and I will be your coordinator for today's event. Please note, this conference is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, there will be an opportunity for live questions at the end. This may be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. You may register at any time. I will now hand you over to your host, Ian Crosby, CEO, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you very much for that. So welcome to everybody. Appreciate you making the time for the half-year results and business update. I'm very pleased to be on this afternoon with Kerstin von Buchsteller, our CFO, who you know very well. So with that, I would like to move to the slides. Obviously, important disclaimers on slide three and slide four, and then moving to the business update. So in terms of year-to-date 2021, I would say that on the key aspects here, we've made some, as we've announced previously, very good, strong progress clinically on Poseidon. We reported the second set of interim results on Poseidon in the middle of the year, and we were delighted that these reconfirmed and extended our understanding along the primary endpoints in this important FDA pivotal study. We did announce earlier that we were going to have to expand enrollment to make up for higher rates of patient attrition prior to implant in the study, and we are still awaiting FDA approval for that decision to expand the study enrollment. As we get more information from FDA on that and clarity on the timing, we'll come back and obviously update the market there. In terms of the PMA submission, the FDA regulatory submission for approval, there's an awful lot that goes into that beyond the clinical data, particularly in terms of verification and validation. And as we have moved through our detailed planning and as we are getting increased feedback from our suppliers on that detailed planning, it's become clear that the worldwide shortage of complex electronic components is having an increase on this. Lead times are extended way beyond that which we anticipated. So the implication of that is we are now expecting to file our PMA in mid-2023. This does not impact our European commercial activities, nor our clinical studies, so those remain on track, but the actual submission filing is now expected to be mid-2023. Moving across to the heart failure program, as previously communicated, we saw the very exciting, very strong top-line data from our Red Desert study, which gave us the confidence and the information to allow us to move into the Sahara Desert trial, where we can focus in on the decompensated heart failure patients. That trial is underway, and we feel confident about reporting interim data and top-line data as previously communicated. The DSR program more broadly, as we've discussed before, very strong progress beginning of the year. Just going back, the patents were granted in both the US and Europe. These are key fundamental patents that give us plenty of runway there to exploit this breakthrough approach. We're very pleased with that. We have now, as we previously communicated, expanded our program from both the long-term DSR treatment using the alpha pump to now include short-term DSR therapy, taking a drug-led approach through the regulators there, which we believe reduces our regulatory risk and increases our commercial potential there by accelerating the potential commercial and clinical acceptance of this therapy. The move to Infuse 2.0 is going well. The development program there in terms of the CMC work and all the other work associated with fulfilling animal and human trials is making good progress for a complex process there, and we look forward to reporting back on that in due course. We were delighted that Jackie Fielding has now joined our board as a non-exec. Her track record at Medtronic stands on its own, doesn't need further explanation, and we believe she'll have great, and she already has demonstrated great insights there, and look forward to her joining the board very shortly there. Cash, always a highlight for you, I know. Our runway is through into the second quarter of next year on the basis of our successful capital raise beginning of this year. So those are the key highlights for this year. Moving ahead onto page six, just a reminder now, it's become very clear that Sequana is not the alpha pump company. Sequana Medical is the company that is focused on diuretic resistant fluid overload. It is more than the alpha pump. We now have two core technologies. We have the alpha pump and we have direct sodium removal. Each of those has a focus in treating the diseases. So alpha pump by itself is focused on the liver ascites and the malignant ascites market there. DSR has an effect on generalized fluid overload. First focus there is on congestive heart failure, and we are exploring the potential in renal failure as well. But what is unique is that we can bring together those two technologies, alpha pump and DSR, to create a unique solution focused on the important critical North American market to create alpha pump DSR for long-term treatments of congestive heart failure. So we're a company focused on an important clinical segment with key enabling technologies with strong IP protection that put us in a unique position to access large and important markets that are currently poorly served. Quick reminder on page 7, what we've seen in the second interim analysis on Poseidon earlier this year. On the primary endpoints of reduction in therapeutic paracentesis, substantial and durable reduction there. FDA target 50% reduction, we're demonstrating again over a 90% reduction. FDA target of 50% of patients having a 50% reduction, again, we've demonstrated that 100% of our patients had at least a 50% reduction. So delighted about what we're seeing there. Safety profile in line with expectations. And in terms of quality of life, clinically important improvement in quality of life, quickly and durable out to 12 months there post-implantation. So up to 26 patients in that cohort now, in the rolling cohort, delighted to see those results are consistent and so strong. I hope many of you heard the KOL call we had on the liver ascites side with Dr. Vargas and Dr. Knutnan from the Mayo Clinic, Arizona. They highlighted and reinforced the messages, I think, that we've been talking about in terms of the role of alpha pump in treating particularly NASH-related ascites in the United States. Dr. Vargas was very vocal talking about what a burden ascites is on the patients and how it leads to serious complications, how his patient group is migrating across to NASH becoming increasingly important year by year, and that absolutely aligns with our thesis that NASH ascites is going to drive the growth and drive the social change in this very important and poorly served clinical need. We see patient support and patient drive for the alpha pump solution, addressing the key problems of these patients. Dr. Knutnan went on to talk about the fact that the alpha pump procedure is a straightforward procedure that leverages simple techniques and traditional equipment there and fits in very well with the workflow and needs a very limited amount of training there. And she was highlighting the importance of following the protocol there of using ultrasound for the catheter placement there. So it was good to hear. And also particularly around the fact that they can use lighter levels of anesthesia in compared to Europe. So using local anesthesia with light sedation enables a lighter patient burden and potentially opens up a broader patient universe here as well. And then Dr. Vargas went on to highlight around the results that what we are showing from the interim patients so far is important for these patients and is what these patients are seeking, what clinicians are seeking as a treatment solution here. So very good. If you haven't listened to it, please do. It is on our investor webpage under events and presentations. So in terms of the update on the program there, we spoke to you a couple of months back saying that we needed to expand enrollment in Poseidon to make sure that we had sufficient patients to reach the 40 implanted patients followed up for 6 months in the pivotal cohort because we had seen higher rates of attrition than we had planned for. Two factors. One was COVID had expanded the length these patients were in the trial for, which caused a higher rate of fallout. The second one was the trial is unique because it has two periods when you have to meet the inclusion-exclusion criteria. Typically in a trial, you meet the inclusion-exclusion criteria, you get treated. In this study, you meet the inclusion-exclusion criteria, then you spend 3 months in the observation phase, then you have to undergo the inclusion-exclusion criteria once again before you become implanted. These patients are volatile, and recurrent and refractory ascites has many clinical events during the course of treatment. So it's quite likely that during the observation period that events will occur. For example, they may be admitted to hospital for some infection or bacterial peritonitis, for example, or kidney injury. If that happens, then they may well fail the inclusion criteria. Absolutely nothing to do with the alpha pump, of course, because they haven't seen an alpha pump at that point, but it demonstrates the fragility of these patients. So we had a higher dropout rate than expected, so we needed to expand the enrollment scope to meet this and the need for this higher dropout. We are still waiting to hear back from FDA. Our conditions, our conversations continue with the FDA on this topic, and we will update you once we have clarity on the timeline for expanding enrollment and then completing enrollment, and then obviously reporting the primary endpoint. I would say that if it had not been for this delay in FDA feedback, we believe we would still be on track for completing enrollment by the end of the third quarter. That's on the clinical side. On the PMA submission side, we have a slight delay there too. The PMA submission is a very complex document for a Class 3 implantable device. It obviously has the clinical information, but it has a huge amount of information in there on the verification and validation on the design and manufacture and performance of the device. As you know, we've been approved in Europe for many years with under the CE mark, but the US operates a different approach to design, verification, and validation. And we have to go through that process for the PMA submission. As we go through that, and as we go through the detailed planning, and now communication with our suppliers, and how the information we need fits in with their quality management systems, it is clear that the lead time for supply of subcomponents from these suppliers, according to this design criteria, is extended. And the reason for that extended delivery period is there is this worldwide shortage of complex electronic components there. You've seen it across many industries, particularly in the car industry here, but there are many large customers, as you see, the car companies are being delayed. As Sequana looks to secure the products it needs for its clinical trials, but also we have to secure product for our first year at least of commercial sales in the US of the same product, that means that lead times for deliveries have become extended. And those extended lead times were unexpected and have resulted in an estimated 6 month delay in submission of the PMA. It is frustrating, but as you've seen, it's a worldwide phenomenon, and this is the result of the collaboration with our partners and understanding in detail what is required here. So we continue to work hard to source those components as rapidly as possible and minimize the delay, but we wanted to guide on this today. This does not have an impact on our European commercial business nor our clinical trials, because those activities do not require this verification and validation activities. Finally, the sponsor patient registry and the patient preference study as part of the Poseidon program are ongoing and progressing well, and we look forward to reporting data on those in due course. Further on, liver in Europe, as we guided before, commercial activity has resumed in Europe. I think it was a year ago we updated you that we had a problem with commercials, with production of product, resulting in reduced yield of manufacturing yield. So we had to focus our product on clinical trials and on the DSR program. And as a result, we did not have sufficient product to support our commercial business. That situation has now been resolved. We have returned our production yields to acceptable levels there. And now we have sufficient product to support that market. And we re-entered the market in August this year. And we believe our 2021 revenues on a pro rata basis will be in line with periods before the reduced manufacturing supply. Okay, now moving across to, that was liver, now moving across to heart failure. In terms of Red Desert, as we presented in the middle of the year, the Red Desert study delivered strong clinical proof of concept, delivered beyond what we expected, and expanded our understanding of what DSR did. Not only does it get sodium and fluid out of the body, but it appears to return the diuretic response of the kidney to normalized levels. We saw dramatically increased levels of diuretic response after 6 weeks of treatment, and that effect lasted a long period of time, many, many months going out there. We saw even at 10 months median follow-up, we had an 80% reduction, 80% reduction in the need for oral loop diuretics. And alongside that, we see that because we see an improvement in the cardiorenal substrate. We see improvement in the heart failure score. We see a reduction in natriuretic peptides at least a 30% decrease. And we see an improvement in renal function. We see EGFR returning towards more normalized levels there. And typically, clinicians are used to seeing you can either get an improvement in congestive status, or you can get improvement in cardiorenal status. You can't get both historically. We believe this is the first time you can deliver both. An improvement in diuretic response and an improvement in cardiorenal status. So that's exciting for how we position DSR therapy going forward, well beyond just removing fluid and sodium. And that is what we are pursuing in Sahara now. Now we are targeting patients who have a decompensated patients who have excess fluid, 5, 6, 7 liters extra, kilos of fluid beyond what they should have despite being on high doses of diuretics. As you know, we are now targeting to remove this fluid, seeing how long it takes to remove that fluid with intensive treatment. How long does it take to get improved cardiorenal response? And then we move them into a maintenance phase where we're looking for long-term therapy to see how long does this improved benefit stay in place for. And that will obviously be exciting to see how this therapy would really be used going forward. So we're targeting for interim data by year end, and then top line data in the second half of next year. That study is being done with Infuse 1.0, the old 10% dextrose solution, the one we used in Red Desert. We believe that is not the best therapeutic Infuse going forward. So we are developing our own proprietary Infuse, what we call DSR Infuse 2.0. This is a combination of dextrose and icodextran, obviously sodium-free formulation again, which is the basis of our key patents here. So we have strong protection around that. We believe this will give a better therapeutic profile, make it a more effective treatment, a treatment which is easier to use in these patients, and it will also give us an IP-protected revenue stream going forward. So obviously we now see the ability to sell not only the pump, but a recurring revenue stream of high-value, high-margin Infuse there. And to go with that, we've now introduced short-term DSR, which is effectively this Infuse delivered through a peritoneal catheter for short-term use, so we can go through the regulators with a drug-only approach. We believe this will speed and smooth our path through the regulators. It will also give physicians the ability to use DSR therapy in a much simpler approach. Initially, it's not as easy to use for the patients over long periods of time, but it will be easier for the physicians to use initially while they generate that initial clinical data, while they generate that initial familiarity, which is key for broad clinical acceptance of new therapies. They're so exciting to see that. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Kirsten to talk about the financial results for the first half. Thank you, Kirsten.
Hey, thank you, Ian, and good afternoon to you all from my end as well. So half-year results. Revenue, well, as you could see, were limited, and as Ian already mentioned, those are as a result of the reduced supply of the alpha pump for our commercial activities in Europe. And the reasons are twofold. I mean, the lower manufacturing yield, of course, was still playing, and the COVID impact of the alpha pump procedures. The operating expenses, those increased by 22% to 11.5 million. Also, as Ian mentioned in the beginning of the presentation, we are preparing for the PMA submission and the further preclinical and clinical work in our DSR development, and that's driving the costs up. This brings the net loss for the first half of the year 2021 to 11.9 million euros. Cash situation end of June was about 22 million euros, which gives us a cash runway into Q2 2022. Ian?
Great. Thank you very much, Kirsten. Great. In terms of just an update on leadership team here, we have expanded the and reinforced our executive leadership team with a couple of additions over the course of this year. We brought in Andreas Werth to reinforce on the R&D side, and we brought on Dragomir to reinforce on the production and manufacturing side as we prepare for increasing scale as we move to North America. On the board, we brought Jackie Fielding on, as I mentioned earlier, for Medtronic. Jason Hannon has needed to step down because, as you know, he's moved back to California again to drive the growth of Mainstay in the US, and logistically it's just too hard for him to support the board. He remains a good, strong supporter, and we wish him well with the rollout of the Mainstay product in the United States. Moving along to slide 15, key milestones, obviously. This first half of this year, we had some good progress. Obviously, as we know, Red Desert, Sahara, interim analysis on Poseidon that we previously communicated. The expected completion of enrollment now in Poseidon is now pending FDA approval, so we'll update you when we have clarity from FDA on that timing. Sahara interim results are expected before year end. In terms of Poseidon primary endpoint, that is obviously tied to completion of enrollment. So again, as soon as we can update you on one, we'll have the data on the other. And Sahara top-line results remain in line for second half of next year. And then the plan remains to start our first FDA study, Mojave in DSR for short-term DSR, in the second half of next year too. So we continue to progress the clinical program, and as we have more information, we will update you. So with that, I would like to turn it over to the audience and for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
If you would like to ask a live question over the phone, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and I will prompt you for your turn. Again, that is star 1 for live questions. And we have our first question in from the line of Ingrid Gafanal of Kempen & Co. When you're ready, please proceed.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the brief presentation. Ian, I was just hoping you could just clarify one point for us. There isn't necessarily a problem with your suppliers and their ability to comply with the PMA regulations, but rather just a shortage of material, right?
There's no problem with their ability to comply, Ingrid. That's absolutely correct. It's not necessarily a shortage. It is the fact that the lead times, the worldwide shortage is meaning that capacity is very stretched in the industry as a whole. So there is not off-the-shelf components ready to obtain, and where we need these products, we have to take our place in the queue. So everybody is using capacity here. So it's you're right. It manifests itself as a shortage. But it is really the fact that the lead times for supply of these products are extending, and that's what pushes out our PMA timeline. I hope that clarifies the point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And just to follow up on that, and I'd say going forward, is there any way that you as a company could be able to try and avoid that situation, or are you also very limited on the number of suppliers that are available for the components that you need?
Going forward, we one of the reasons why this is occurring is exactly that. We are trying to avoid this problem going forward. We are making sure the product that we file for approval in the PMA has to be the product that we are using commercially for the first year of sales. There's no way to getting any amendments from FDA on the content of the product. If we wanted to change a component in that product between filing of the PMA and launch of the product, it wouldn't be possible. So we have to make sure that the product we file with the PMA, the product that we do our verification and validation testing on, has to be the product that we'll be using for at least the first year in the United States. So what we are doing is we are making sure with our suppliers that they can supply us the several hundred units now that we need for verification and validation testing, but can also supply us with the raw materials, with the components that we need for commercial manufacture in the United States. So effectively, we're taking some pain now to make sure that when we come to commercial launch in North America, that there's no interruption of supply there as a result of those long lead times. If we need to make changes to the product going forward because of product availability or suppliers changing, we can do that once we are approved in North America or in the US or Canada, but we cannot do that until we are approved. So this is a prudent, forward-looking approach to make sure that we are we're future-proofing ourselves for at least the first year of commercial sales in North America, and we continue to work with the suppliers to give us more, and that gives us more lead time for making sure that beyond that point in time, we can access those products. We have a strong relationship with our suppliers here, and as we get this greater predictability, we have the ability to live with those long supply times going forward. I know people are already talking about the supply situation correcting itself over the next 12, 18 months. So hopefully that will help us as a commercial company there. But in the meantime, getting product needed for testing now or in the short term, that doesn't help us, but it will. This is all about protecting ourselves and protecting our ability to have a good, effective commercial launch once we hopefully get FDA approval.
All right, Ian, thank you for the comprehensive answer. Thank you.
Great, Ingrid, thank you for that.
All right, before we take our next caller, a reminder, please press star one if you would like to ask a live question on today's call. Our next question comes from the line of Lenny von Steenhouse of KBC Securities. When you're ready, please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for taking the question. A few from my side. I was wondering, Ian, could you provide some granularity specifically on the validation and verification activities needed for the PMA registration and how specifically these are impacted by these component shortages? While this doesn't affect the clinical or European commercial activities, is this basically because you indeed need, let's say, a larger set of these components for these activities? Is this really a conscious decision in terms of prioritization, or do you already simply have product available to cover clinical and initial European commercial activities? And I'll leave it at that.
Okay, let's hope I can answer that question simply, and if not, please ask for clarification. As you know, we've been approved in Europe for many years. We have a CE mark, and to get a CE mark, we have to go through an approved design process and a verification and validation process. Those standards are tightening over time, but while it may seem strange, but the US process for verification and validation is different to that used in Europe. So we have to repeat our verification and validation process, even though it is the same pump, the same system. We are not changing the pump or the system for the North American market. We have to go through a different verification and validation exercise. So we have to come up with a different set of specifications and a different set of testing for subcomponents when we go into the North American market versus the European market. So that's just the facts of life. They exist like that. So while we can get a component from the supplier tomorrow for the current production for our European commercial or our European clinical trials, or indeed the Poseidon trial, we have to give a different set of instructions to our subcomponent suppliers to produce subcomponents for us when it comes to the PMA, PMA filing. So we have to give them a different set of instructions, and coming up with that, those set of specifications is an extensive process internally. And until we have gone through that rigorous design, the rigorous verification and validation approach, we cannot give that revised specification. And until we have those specifications, the subcomponent suppliers cannot complete their own revision work necessary to make sure they comply with those standards. Then they, at that point in time, they can then place the orders. At that point in time, we can then place orders with the suppliers to get the subcomponents. We had anticipated that the timelines for supply of those components, once we met those specifications, would be relatively short, would be in line with historical levels. And what we see now is they're saying to us, once you've given us the revised specifications and you place those new orders, that's when the clock starts on your lead time, because you cannot place it early because of our quality management system. So it's sequential. It's one has to happen after another. That would be fine if we did not have the resulting long product lead times to actually obtain those newly specified products. If they were available in a matter of weeks or were available off the shelf, we wouldn't have these delays here. We're now facing delays where some electronic subcomponents have 20, 40 plus weeks lead times. So the reason why, that's why we see this subsequent delay, and the PMA submission, one of the testings that is required for PMA submission is real-time testing for the anticipated product life. So we have to actually run the system, not accelerated, but actually real-time, charge it and use it every day for the expected life. And over that period, that can't be shortened. That's what it takes for part of this mission. And to do that, we have to have the final product. So you take the FDA submission date, you count back the period of time needed for the real-time aging. You count back from that the period of time it takes to manufacture the device. You count back from that the period of time it's needed to obtain the subcomponents to manufacture the device. And then you get to a date which is kind of around this time. That's why the process is so long. So hopefully, Lenny, that gives you a little bit of an understanding on why the timeline is extended for the PMA submission. The reason why it does not impact European commercial or clinical trials is European commercial just follows we can buy those products off the shelf today, or not off the shelf, but we can place routine orders today because there is no change in product specification for the European product. And when it comes to the Poseidon trial, we do not need to comply with those revised design process for Poseidon because it's still a clinical trial. So we have this flexibility for the Poseidon trial and the Red Desert trial. The Sahara trial obviously follows the European product. So that is why there is no impact on our current supply. It's not a matter of prioritization. It's effectively two distinct tracks, and we fill those distinct tracks using separate processes. I hope that made sense, Lenny. Please ask me for clarification if it did not.
Sure, no, it totally does, Ian, and perhaps picking on to that, as you mentioned, that counting backwards from the point where you actually secure the components and doing all the actual validation work, in that sense, because now you've mentioned, okay, we estimate a roughly 6-month delay, in that sense, do you have a feeling that, let's say, the risk that this product shortages would still push timelines very much further is quite limited, if I understand correctly? Or is it still a risk if this really persists that you'll have to push it further out?
We believe we have, in terms of understanding the risk here, we, based on our current understanding of the risk and the process, we believe that the 6-month delay is appropriate there. It still depends on our suppliers going through their internal processes once we've ordered that stock. So there is still the potential for that date to be delayed. We don't have 100% foresight, but we believe, based on our best guidance to date, the guidance that we are most confident in now, it is that six months is the median case. It's not the best case. It's our median case there. So there's no such thing. I can't give you 100% promise on it there, but it is our median case there, our mean case in terms of likely PMA submission date.
Thanks, Ian, and perhaps a very last question, if I may, for Kirsten. Looking at the OPEX picture, as these quality activities take somewhat more time, how should we think about the OPEX going into to 22? Can you give us a bit of an estimate on any incremental extra spending that this delay is causing? Thank you.
Sure. So, I mean, you said it well. So it's clear that cost spend is not going down soon. So we definitely in 22 will have a high spend for all those projects. So we're definitely similar levels or a little bit up.
All right. Thanks very much.
Lenny, I'll give you one comment on there. Is that at the moment we are dealing with a kind of a unique coincidence on the regulatory side here. As you may know, in Europe, the medical device regulations have fundamentally changed as of May this year. So MDR, medical device regulations, came in May of this year, and that was that wasn't a tweaking, that was a really fundamental shift of our of how we've regulated in Europe. We are also now, we believe that we're on track to be compliant with MDR by year end, which would be a fantastic achievement for the company. And we're also now complying with MDSAP, which is a medical device single audit program, which is preparing us now for working in US, Canada, potentially Australia and other territories. It creates more efficiencies in medical audits going forward. So we want to get regulated under MDSAP too. That's a different set of regulatory work too. And we're doing the PMA work under FDA standards. So there's a tremendous amount of activity gone into quality and regulatory, which impacts on the cost there, but also impacts on the cost in engineering and the cost in production too. So I think the step-ups you've seen in cost in quality, engineering, and production will be maintained certainly through the end of next year, may dribble over partly into the point up until we file, but those are really related to complying with these higher levels and doing the costs associated with getting first-time registration for MDR, MDSAP, and now PMA. So those are the realities of living in today's medical device world. There's a real step up, which is great for us as an industry, we need to be complying with these with higher standards expectations of the industry.
Got it. Thanks, Ian.
Good.
All right, and at this time, we'll ask for any final questions. Please press *1 at this time if you would like to ask a question on today's call. We have no incoming questions on the phone. I'll return the call over to you, Ian.
Good. Well, thank you very much for that. Appreciate everyone's time this afternoon. I think this year we've seen there's been a lot of great progress fundamentally in the company this year. We should not let these two recent delays here overshadow what has been tremendous fundamental progress at the company. We are making huge steps forward to bringing our liver product to the North American market, but also bringing DSR from an idea to a real concept which has much broader applicability than we've seen before. So we look forward to continuing to update you as we have more progress on both of these programs and more clarity on the timing there. But we're always available as needed, and we look forward to speaking to you again in due course.
Thank you, everyone, for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect. Hosts, please stay online.